This is CliffCentral.com. Animal Central on CliffCentral.com.
Hello and welcome to Animal Central on CliffCentral.com. My name is Ainsley Hay and I'm your host. I was your absent host last week because I'm pretty sure I had man flu. I was man down, woman down for 3 days in bed with a fever. Excuse me if I cough and splutter, but I think I'm still slightly diseased. Hopefully I don't get the poor people in studio sick. I'm just looking at them and apologizing now.
I'm seeing the evil looks about the man flu comment.
Yes, I know. It was done intentionally. You have risen to my bait.
Good thing you're on the other side.
Yes. So as you can hear, we have Dr. Clint Olsen from Bayer who's back in studio. You've had a bit of a dramatic afternoon.
That was quite exciting. I left the office with plenty of time to spare to get there, which one
well
does.
Done. Well
one
done.
One lives in Johannesburg. And got stuck in a snarl up on the R24. If anybody is taking the R24 to Johannesburg, just past Edenvale, and I'll stay away. It comes down to one lane.
Oh.
Long story short, I got rear-ended by a truck whose brakes failed.
Oh.
But I'm here in one piece. Good to go.
No, you've handled it very calmly because I can promise you there would be all sorts of, you know, I would be in an absolute piece of value. So well done.
Thank
well
you.
Done. You're keeping it together.
I'll fall apart afterwards.
Yes. Yeah, no. And I feel sorry for the truck driver. I believe he would have got a piece of your mind, hopefully.
No time. No time. Took photos, threw a business card at him and ran.
Well played. So today in the show, we have a guest joining us via Skype because he's lucky enough to not have to live in Joburg and deal with traffic and being rear-ended by trucks. We have Tozi Zakufa joining us. He is the program manager for Africa of the Humane Society International. Tozi, are you there?
I'm here, Ansley. How are you?
Hi, Tozi. I'm well. Thanks, and you?
Good afternoon to everyone.
Yes, thank you so much for joining us. What's the weather like in Cape Town?
Well, it's perfect, if I can say it like that. It's
lucky.
It's good.
Tough
it's good.
Life. Tough life, hey. So, Tozi, you've got some very, very exciting news regarding some chickens. Do you want to tell us a bit about what's going on?
Well, you know, Ansley, it depends, you know, what is good and how you view good. But, it's, I would rather call it interesting news, in a sense that, major retailers and restaurants of the world have announced that, you know, the chickens will be out of the cages come 2025. Wow. Others 2026, and particularly in this case now we're talking about Burger King.
Okay.
That they've recently made an announcement that their chickens who are laying eggs for them will be outside of the cages by 2025.
Wow.
So these are indeed good news, interesting news, in a sense then that in 4 years' time, you know, 9 years' time, in some instances, chickens will be laying eggs out of the cages.
Wow.
But I must stress, Ansley, that in South Africa, Burger King is not offering a breakfast as yet, and therefore this really doesn't apply to them. But this is something that they are looking into, you know, once they start rolling out their breakfast meals, hopefully they will follow suit as well.
Yeah.
Maybe starting off. From the onset, starting off from sourcing, you know, from chickens that are not are not cramped and
yes.
really in crowded spaces.
And do you know how long it's taken to lobby to get this change?
Well, it's been a decade, you know.
Yeah.
Talking to colleagues in the U.S. as well and in other countries, it's been maybe 15 years, 18 years,
and
hence I'm saying, you know, it depends what is good, because
yeah.
some people are saying, you know, it's going to happen in 2026. Why must we be happy about that?
Mm.
You know, why can't it happen tomorrow? But of course, these are businesses, and unfortunately, they are looking at things economically at
yeah.
this stage, and we are there as well to say, look, let's not only look at things economical, but let's look at the ethical side of things as well.
Yeah.
Let's look at the impact that the animals are having to undergo because of these systems. So
mm.
we would love for them to go out of cages as early as tomorrow, but unfortunately it will take so many years.
Yeah. It's just, it's always so sad that, you know, big business like this that makes so much profit. I mean, I don't think that we can even comprehend the type of profit that these, you know, international, multinational chains make, that it takes so long for them to even pay a pittance to animal welfare. And then you have organizations like yourselves and other animal welfare organizations. Locally, we have the NSPCA, who work so tirelessly off of so little money to try and make people just to look after their animals properly.
That's so true. You know, Ansley, I think we have a bigger role to play. There are what? Let's say average maybe 120 animal welfare organizations. I'm including now environmental organization and wildlife, whether it's rhino poaching and so on. And it will be 220, but many of them are local SPCAs in different regions. So let's say 120, 115, you know, roundabout.
Yeah.
And really representing a small constituency here and there. But if we were to come together and club together and sort of vote with our pockets, you know, going to supermarkets and demanding higher welfare products, and not necessarily look at the price, which is cheap, and then buy because it's cheap. If we can do that, unfortunately, it's difficult. I mean, we hear every day, this at least this year, that it's going to be a tough year for South African consumers. And meat will double, probably eggs will rise by 40-30%. And indeed, it's if we can make that change ourselves by voting with our pockets, I think industry won't have a choice, because they're supplying us. And then if we say this is the type of product that we want, then I believe that a change will be achieved.
Exactly. And I mean, it's so much more accessible nowadays. I remember I went through a very vegetarian stage after studying at Onnistepoort and doing a couple of dissections and putting myself off of things for a while. And it was very difficult to get hold of either vegetarian food, or especially or vegan food, or even just free-range food. Because once you become aware of the processes that are involved with how your meat is produced, I think as an ethical consumer, and if you say you're an animal lover, you really should take easy steps, like just buying free range meat. And it is a lot more accessible than it used to be. Yes, there is a price difference, but you can't put price on animal welfare. But unfortunately, when you're feeding the masses, that's a whole different story.
Yeah. And in fact, you know, our call, Ansley, nowadays is really to say to industry and the government, for that matter, let's look at the whole process holistically. You know, the impact it has on the environment, the impact it has on human health, the impact it has on animal welfare. Let's look at holistically all these issues. And then, I mean, what is wrong with eating good quality food, but lesser times than really eating junk food which has detrimental effect to our health and of course detrimental effect to the environment and the animals. So it's really a call for consciousness to really, you know, rise up instead of looking at the prices.
No, that's you're spot on with that. Now, Tony, tell me something about so obviously I think a lot of our I speak on for myself, maybe not a lot of listeners are aware about Humane Society International, but now we have an African branch as well. Just tell us a bit about the African branch of the Humane Society. How long has it been going for?
Oh, well, it's still at the baby,
baby
stage. Yeah, we're still crawling.
Okay.
But we're really maneuvering well, and we are engaging with retailers. I mean, interestingly enough, next week as well, we'll be meeting with different stakeholders, Department of Agriculture, University of Pretoria, your retailers, Woolworths, Pick and Pay, and so on, and really introducing ourselves and the work that we do. But currently we are only having two branches or departments, if I can call it that, Ansley. Farm Animal Department, which really looks at this stage, looks at the pig welfare and the laying hens welfare. Only those two for now. I mean, we look at other issues as well, but we're really highlighting those two because they suffer the most in South Africa, and strategically we looked at those two divisions. And I have a colleague in Makalali Lodge in Limpopo doing animal elephant contraception.
Okay.
And those are the two projects that we're really focusing on in South Africa at this stage, but looking to expand in the couple of months' time, maybe doing humane education, doing cats and dogs as well in the long run. So definitely HSI is here to stay. There is a need.
Fantastic.
You know, it's an entry to the African continent, and then definitely, I mean, South Africa is one of the leading meat consumption countries in fact, it's number one in on the African continent. Yeah.
Oh wow, I didn't know that. Sure.
Oh yes, we consume four times what Lesotho next door consumes.
Wow.
Yeah, even five times to what Nigeria consumes. So yeah, we up there.
Yeah.
Second to us is Morocco, I think, if I'm not mistaken. Morocco,
okay.
Egypt. But yeah, we're number one.
Okay. Sure. Yeah. No, it's I think it's great that you guys are here, and it definitely sounds like you've been hard at work. I think, Clint, if I think production animals, so your farm animals, they definitely do get quite a tough time in terms of welfare and the conditions that they're kept in.
Look,
I'd
be careful.
Sorry.
I'm going to keep you on the line, Tozi, and I've got a guest in studio, Clint. So we all just got to speak together, if that's okay.
Nice to meet you, Clint.
Nice to meet you. I think we're to be careful of stereotyping all farmers.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of very responsible farmers out there who have a very tough time balancing. You know, at the end of the day, to me, it comes about ethical and sustainable production.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about the protein requirements, not just of South Africa, but of the world, going to staggering levels by 2050. If you look at the world population
projections. Just because of the burgeoning population of humans.
Exactly that. And so one does need to farm ethically, and one does need to farm sustainably. And there's a lot of very good farms out there. There are some guys that I think, and it's the same as in anything, there's going to be a handful of guys that are going to give everybody else a bad name. I'm pleased to see that there is a very strong awareness of animal welfare now starting to come through.
Mm-hmm.
But as we pointed out, if you look at the timelines involved, it's not something that can change overnight.
Mm-hmm.
And it is going to have a cost implication because free range and organic farming, it sounds weird, but is more expensive.
Yes,
because
no,
it's more space intensive and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, and the consumers are going to be hardest hit. Are your lower income consumers?
But what incentives are there for farmers to farm ethically?
I don't know. You know, well, besides the humane, there are laws. There's very strict laws. There's animal welfare.
I've worked in animal welfare enforcement in this country, law enforcement, and I'm sorry,
correct.
I'm going to poo-poo that right now because
the laws
the law,
are there. It's not to say they're properly enforced followed.
Yes. Yeah.
But the laws are there. I mean, if you look at the Animal Welfare Act, it's a well-written act. It really is. It just needs to be enforced. And you need the infrastructure, you need the people, you need the manpower to do that.
And that there is.
And you do then also need to create the awareness.
Mm-hmm.
So the incentive to the producer is going to come from the person who buys his cattle or his sheep or his chickens or his eggs.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to say, look, I'm only going to buy from you if you meet the following criteria. And a lot of your sort of bigger, more responsible food chains and retail chains and supermarket chains are starting to go that way, and we're not going to mention any names because that's going to lead to all sorts of other debates.
Mm-hmm.
But the awareness is increasing, and that is, I think, the first step in the right direction.
Okay, and then Tozi, from the consumer side, what sort of guarantee is there that if I go and I buy my lamb chops and it says that my lamb chops are free range, what is the guarantee that it actually is free range? Is there any guarantee for the consumer?
You know, at this stage, Ansley, interesting that you should raise that one up. There's definitely no guarantee, and it's only now that we are in talks, you know, with different organizations. As I said, next week that animal welfare approved from the U.S. will be in South Africa. Looking at, you can find more information on them on animalwelfareapproved.org.
Okay.
You know, looking at the viability of animal welfare audits. Honestly, we do have food safety and meat safety audits in all companies. But now consumers are wanting this guarantee that, okay, this is free range. Who looked at this and who approved it and who is saying it is? And then that's really what we'll be looking at in the next couple of months. But at this stage, really, I mean, you might have read somewhere that, you know, the free range, the label itself is being misused. You know, if these, for example, chickens are not in cages, they are labeled free range, yeah. Whereas free range really means that they must roam around outside in forage for a couple of hours in a day. And these chickens do not do that. They are just afforded maybe six people. Poop holes, you know, in a massive industrial shed, whereby some of them are kept inside by the food that is inside. They don't even go outside. So yes. When you buy this egg, you think it's free range, but the chicken who produced it never saw the light, you know?
Exactly. Mm. That's a huge problem. So listeners, as you can hear, we're having a very interesting topic today. It affects all of us because all of us, well, most of us eat meat. So if you'd like to contact us, please give us a call on 0861 555 189. Also, you can get us on Twitter at cliffcentral.com, Facebook Cliff Central, and then WeChat. You can get us on Cliff Central by tapping connect and then send a message to the show. So we're going to go to a music break now, and we'll be back afterwards.
This is cliffcentral.com.
Right, we're back from a wee little music break there. So I have got Tozi Zakufa on Skype from Humane Society International. Tozi, you still there?
Still here,
Great. And then I've also got Dr. Clint Austin from Bayer, and we are speaking about farm animals. So we've been speaking about chickens and the different practices and that Burger King has committed to phasing out battery farming of eggs in 2025, which is an awfully long time to go still, but it's definitely a step in the right direction. And it's good to know that you, Tozi, and your team are putting the train on the tracks to push this in South Africa. And you say you've got a big meeting next week, so we'll definitely be thinking of you and hoping that you get a lot of buy-in from the relative stakeholders. Have you got some positive feedback so far?
So far, so good, Ansley. I mean, you know, you'll always want more, but it's good when there's progress.
Yeah.
However little or however slow the steps to that progress would be, yes, the journey has started, and I think as Clint has also mentioned that, I mean, there's a change, even if then we vote with our pockets, you know, but people are getting, are knowing more about this. I see there's a shift in the middle class, really, to, whether it's for health benefits, but they are really going for organic foods, and then they know that they should invest in themselves, and therefore they are buying, you know, good quality food. But what we are highlighting now as an organization is that whilst you are looking after your health, can you spare thought as well for these animals? I mean, they were really created to roam around freely, to flap their wings. Why then wouldn't they be denied to flap do a basic behavior of flapping their wings? You know, it's just not right. And there are people, I mean, in the communities, you know, previously disadvantaged communities that we engage with, and then when they see these videos, they say, this can't be.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't believe that I'm getting eggs that are coming from this system.
Exactly.
I didn't know this is what happens.
Yeah.
But I agree that it doesn't necessarily then mean that they will go and buy free range, because at times they can't afford it.
Yeah.
But they are aware that how these animals are treated is just not right.
No, that's brilliant. I think an important thing that needs to be clarified, and I don't know, Clint, if you want to handle this, I think... Some people get confused between the terms organic and free range, and sometimes it's sort of interchanged.
Yeah, I think it's a common
confusion.
Area for people to get confused, and it depends what you're referring to. So obviously, if we're referring to cattle and sheep, free range means raised on pasture, so they're not actually finished call weeks, so we say it, or don't spend any time in a feedlot.
Yeah.
Obviously, that is a much longer production cycle. A lot of people often think as well that free range means no medication. And that's also where people get a little bit mistaken. Free range, one of the requirements for free range is that there's no, let's call it, routine antimicrobials mm-hmm. preventative antimicrobials okay. and
so antimicrobials are dewormers,
antibiotics, anything okay. like that. In other words, you don't want to give them for no reason mm-hmm. at all, you know, just for the sake mm-hmm. of giving them.
Whereas when, if you're farming animals in intensive situations, one of the things is you have to give them a lot of antiparasitics.
Well, this is where the confusion comes in. Organic, if we're now talking about medications, or organic means like no, zero preventative, yeah. you know, nothing. Measures, no medications, that kind of thing, which, you know, almost has some welfare implications in itself mm. because you're now creating, you're putting animals together in really close proximity.
So you don't have to be free range to be organic?
No.
Aha.
No. Well, actually, I think it might even be the other way. It's a little bit of it's tricky.
Okay.
I don't think the legislation around it is all that clear. I think yeah. your bigger sort of chains, particularly your bigger retail chains, who actually go and audit their producers,
okay.
are very clear on what you have to conform to in order to be certified as either free range or organic.
Okay.
Now, the hassle with free range, where you're just not allowed to give anything mm. to these animals. You've now gone and put a whole bunch of animals and whatever species they are in very close proximity to one another because that is
what's organic.
Well, no, I'm talking about any production system now. Okay. If we're talking about organic,
yes.
You need to be able to farm sustainably,
yeah.
which means you need to make maximum or best practical use of your available space.
Uh-huh.
So you're putting animals together in a higher density or higher concentration than what they'd be found in nature. So you're actually creating ideal conditions for disease spread, uh-huh. disease incidence, parasites, that kind of thing. And, you know, that sort of needs to be controlled because you're not going to control that. There's going to be welfare implications mm-hmm. to the animals. And also, as a veterinarian, it's not only animal health and animal welfare that concerns me, but having safe food for us and our children mm-hmm. to consume is very important mm-hmm. to me as well.
Mm-hmm.
So one does need to draw that distinction between organic mm-hmm. and free range. Free range, depending if you're talking about cattle, now if they get sick, they are allowed to be treated.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously then there's certain requirements depending on what medications you've been using on the animals. There's certain withdrawal periods that need to be adhered to, and one needs to be very aware of that. Mm-hmm. So I think... our guest was right in that those terms often get misused mm. and they become a marketing mm-hmm. hook.
Yes.
So somebody says, well, our food is organic and our food is free range, when it isn't actually, but they're just using that on the label to hook the consumer.
Yes.
And it is open to abuse, and I think there is some strict control necessary or required. Yeah.
And Josie, I'm very excited that you guys are going to be working on that. I think which countries have had the most success so far with an animal welfare approved brand or brand marketing?
Well, Ansley, thank you for that. It depends. It depends how you look at it. For example, we always quote that Tanzania has the best Animal Welfare Act in on the African continent, only okay. because their Animal Welfare Act of 2008 recognizes animals as sentient beings.
Okay.
You see, you getting there. You starting from the basics, from the foundation. That okay. We now believe that these animals do feel pain
mm.
and they need to be amongst themselves and in a group and so on. You starting from there, it means then whatever it is that you create will always have that sort of background in it. So which is good. Whereas if animals are property, just a property mm. like your car or your laptop and your house, then then, I mean, it depends how you look at it. But I must say that as early as last 10 days, I mean, even now, I know that next week they will be in Polokwane. The Department of Agriculture, Fisheries and Forestry is all out, going in all 9 provinces. There is an animal welfare implementation plan which is being discussed, and that will form the basis of the new Animal Welfare Act, Ansley. And we are really hopeful that our contributions and our comments will draw up a good animal welfare for the country.
But I'm hoping that.
I also wanted to highlight that free range doesn't necessarily at times mean higher welfare. You know, but it is logical that it's better than the cage. But I mean, these animals could be treated inhumanely mm-hmm. whilst being in the outdoors. Mm-hmm. Hence, I just wanted to point that one out as well.
No, that is a valid point. I think the problem is with mass consumerism, which is what we have created as humans, and which is what we live in. It's just, I think A, you're bombarded with so much choice, and B, there's so much marketing with every single product that it's almost, you don't need to ask any questions. You don't need to look any further, because if I want organic chia seed milked from a crying baby on top of Alaska. I can get it nowadays, pretty much.
Yes,
whereas in
yes.
the olden but days, you had a lot less, fewer things, and your choices were limited. Whereas nowadays, there's so much, and it's just so easy to get access.
That's so true. In fact, you know, last year, South Africans consumed close to 8 billion eggs. And that's too many eggs, you know, laid by close to 25 million laying hens. That 8 billion is coming from 25 million laying hens.
Wow.
And it is so sad, so sad. You can ask this from the South African Poultry Association, that less than 5% of those eggs were certified free range, or were from free range, not necessarily certified.
Wow.
But I think out of that 5%, however little it is, out of that 5%, if maybe I'm economical, I would say 2.5% were through free range and 2.5% were not.
Wow.
You know, and that's a high number. And the reason why we do not have free range legislation, which was started already in 2009, 2010, is because industry is not interested.
Yeah.
I mean, 8 billion eggs are coming from a so-called normal system.
Yeah.
Why should we be interested with the 5% that is coming from free range and legislated, you know?
Exactly.
Hence the misuse of the label.
Exactly. But now, I think that's a very good point, because the price difference between free-range eggs and normal eggs is tiny. You don't really feel, as a consumer. Obviously, I'm in the middle class. I'm not speaking for people under my earning income, because they're in a completely different kettle of fish. But from I would say middle class upwards, I can't see any reason to justify not, if you can just make one commitment, one decision to commit to buy free-range eggs. That it's not a very big financial implication. Yes, if you're looking at a pack of lamb chops and free range or not, you can see quite a difference. But really, with the eggs that you can find in the supermarkets, I don't think that it's too far of a stretch. So I would definitely appeal to all of our listeners that maybe it's quite late for a New Year's resolution, but it can be a Easter Bunny resolution, because Easter bunnies have, there's eggs involved. Just make a commitment to do one thing for chickens and to commit to buy free-range eggs. What do you think about that, Tozi?
I think that's perfect, Ansley. In fact, to take it a step further, the question would be, why are we eating eggs? And then once you answer that you're looking for vitamin E, you're looking for this protein, you're looking for that, and then the next question will be, how much do you need of that a day?
Mm.
Now, once you start answering those questions and then looking for substitutes as well, you'll find out then, Ansley, that instead of eating 12 eggs in a week, you can actually eat 6 eggs, and then the other protein you can get from other sources as well. And I mean, we did a test in 2010 looking only at vitamin E of a free-range egg compared to a conventional egg. And you believe it, the free-range egg vitamin E was twice as much as the conventional one.
Really?
So it means if I were to eat one free-range egg, you'll need to eat two more, I mean, to get the same equivalent of vitamin E that I'm getting. So it's good to eat less, but quality food. I think that's the way to go. And with this, if we were to survive 2016 with the prices in 4 or 5 months' time that will come, I personally believe that we can survive any other year then.
No, that's a valid point. I wish I had a big enough place so I could have my own chickens and do my own free range eggs. But obviously that's not an option for majority of South Africans. But Tozi, so tell me a little bit about your sort of career history. I'm interested to hear where you come from. How did you end up with the Humane Society?
Well, it depends if it's interesting or not, but it all started. I like to say it like this: it all started at the then Technikon, at the Port Elizabeth Technikon, Ainsley. I wanted to do biomedical engineering.
Oh.
And what really there's an entrepreneurial spirit in me that wanted to maybe design wheelchairs and prosthetic legs and so on. And that's where I wanted to go. And when I applied, I was told then that the course is full, but there's environmental health for your interest. Mm-hmm. Looking at the program, I saw that okay, there's anatomy and physiology, there's some microbiology and epidemiology, all the logies that were of interest to me, and I thought okay, this is something that I must go for. And then yeah, I did. And on third year, I specialized in meat safety and food safety. And believe it or not, I worked at the abattoir as a meat inspector, mm-hmm. inspecting carcasses, you know, before they are sort of distributed, mm-hmm. and made into products.
Yeah.
Whether it was chickens or ostriches or beef or cattle, you know, something like that. And then whilst doing that for the private sector and the Department of Agriculture for about 7 to 8 years, I met a lady who was still with Compassion in World Farming at the time. And I mean, we worked together. I was telling her about the work that the department is doing. She was telling me about the work that they were doing for animal welfare. And I did say, you know, out of the meat safety that we're doing, only 5% is animal welfare. It's mm-hmm. great that there is an organization out there, organizations out there, including the NSPCA, mm-hmm. who are really looking at animal welfare instead of only food safety.
Mm-hmm.
And whilst I went deep into it, I mean, then with the connections and talking to each other, well, the rest was history. And I found myself in the animal welfare fraternity for the past 8 years now.
Okay. So, Clint, what are the main type of production animals that we've got in South Africa?
Well, I think you look at all the mainstream, we're looking at chicken and mm-hmm. beef, dairy, and pork will be the biggest ones.
Okay. And then the sideline ones that we've got ostrich?
Yeah, our ostrich industry has taken a serious beating over the last few years because of the outbreaks of avian influenza all the time. Our ostrich industry has been decimated by avian influenza, purely because every time we have an outbreak, the EU shuts down all imports.
Wow.
So our ostrich industry has drastically decreased in size over the last decade or so.
Sure. I think avian flu, it was such a huge thing when it hit. It was all over the news and everything. And I think you don't hear about it anymore.
I think we do still have periodic outbreaks. Mm. And I think there's just less ostriches around these days.
True.
And although, truth be told, what you said, I haven't heard of anything in the last few months at least.
Touch wood.
But our ostrich industry has been under serious pressure and under decline.
Huh. And then I think another production animal that they use as well is the crocodiles.
Yeah, and that I think opens a whole different... I nearly used a terrible metaphor, it's a kettle of fish. Because I don't think there's a huge amount of oversight when it comes to regulation for farming crocodiles.
None.
And obviously also the game meat. Let's look at game meat in South Africa as well. Although that, I would suppose, by its very nature, would be free range.
No, it's not, because now they farm wildlife. So the biggest, there is a game meat scheme, or game meat act, which was finally drawn up, because I had to comment on it in one of my past lives. And I think one of the biggest things is that, so as you say, animals like crocodiles and wild animals, yes, they're being, if they're wild, free-ranging, then it's fine. Go and skit it as long as it's not in winter, because then all the guinea fowl are riddled with worms or whatever. So the bush law of the hunters and the pot hunters, people who hunt for consumption, they know very well, and it's a safe form of meat. But I think the problem is now that we are intensively farming these animals for consumption, there's a huge gap that they're falling through, because those products don't have to go through any of the meat safety acts for wholesale sale or consumption by humans.
Look, I know the University of Pretoria is looking at, there's a couple of projects on the go, is looking at residues in game meat.
Mm.
And I think the awareness is very much there.
Mm.
I just haven't heard too much on how far they've gone with it.
Mm, 'cause
but they are subject to testing. I mean, if you've got game meat on your shelves, it's subject to testing.
But it's not to the same degree that your meat.
Absolutely
your,
not, because the commercial operations are
exactly.
You know, that much bigger and that much more well known.
But we're getting to that stage with the game meat now. I mean, if you look at some of the intensive farmings, or when they go in and do a huge cull, you know, it's huge amounts of meat that's being processed and put into the consumer market now.
Well, I mean, we can maybe ask our guest what his feelings on the game. I don't think game is farmed in a type of feedlot situation where you've got 90 animals per pen.
Not yet.
You know, they're still, not yet, but they're still, you know, they're farmed. They're farmed out on large tracts of land, and yes, in higher numbers, but they're at least out there living, and because they're wild,
and with higher stress levels as well, because they haven't adapted.
Correct, but depending on the setup and depending on what exactly it is you're doing, and again, it's got to be ethical and it's got to be sustainable, and we just need to bear that in mind all the time: ethical and sustainable.
It's difficult. I think sometimes the problem is that ethical and sustainable gets interchanged again, and weighing up the balance of running a business when you use animals and making a profit and making it sustainable, but then making the ethical choices. And I think from my side, I wish that there were incentives for farmers to follow more ethical methods.
I think it'll come, because the consumer is going to lead this fight. The consumer is going to go to your retail chain and say, this is what I want as a consumer, as your customer, this is what I want, and you need to get it for me. And then that pressure then gets sort of pushed back higher, further back along the chain, because your large retail chains are going to go to their producers and say, right, our customers want this, and this is what you now need to do, and we will incentivize you you do it this way.
Because if you look at steward conservation programs, so if you have areas on your property that are that you put into conservation programs, you can get tax benefits. So there's incentivization to help with conservation. So we should, with production animals, we really should have incentivization for animal welfare. What are your thoughts on that, Tozi? Have there been any talks about that?
Well, not that I know of, Ansley. In fact, this is not a organizational stance, but this is something that I honestly.
I think we're having difficulties with the Skype here.
Oh dear. Maybe it got re-ended by a truck.
Oh gosh, lucky you. No, I think you've taken all the all the action and bad luck for the day. Oh goodness. So I think it's such a huge topic of conversation, and I will admit I do generalize. I'm very good at that. But I think we have a very long way to go with animal welfare for production animals in South Africa. I think we have come away. We have come from away from where we were, but I think there still is quite a bit to go, and hopefully, I mean, you know, as you say, I think the consumer side of things, that's where we really need to get the drive, and people need to take a bit more of an active stance on their beliefs or what they feel passionately about. I think social media is one of the worst things in terms of that, because it's just demotivated everyone, because now we have armchair activists who think by liking a photo they're standing up for a cause.
They're making a difference.
Exactly.
Yeah, it is true. But you also need to look at socioeconomic conditions. And that's the biggest issue. You know, a guy who's struggling to buy the basic necessities and the basic staples every day is going to quibble over a few cents. It's going to make a difference to him. And because he needs to buy food for his family. And the other side of things that we need to look at is also wealth cattle.
Cattle are totally different.
Yeah. Because here we're not farming cattle for commercial reasons. Yeah. Here we're farming cattle because to an emerging or a communal farmer, those cattle are his bank account.
Exactly.
Now, you know, we can start looking at issues of welfare there as well, because in the drought now in particular, these guys are the hardest hit.
Exactly.
Because they're in the most
remote areas. Yeah.
They don't get, the government support doesn't get to them.
Yeah.
And you can't go in and tell a communal farmer that he needs to depopulate his herd
exactly.
by 50%.
It's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's that side of things to consider as well.
Yeah. Oof. No, it's fine. But at least we've got organizations who are working towards making things better for animals. But I mean, I completely hear what you're saying about the socioeconomics, and you know, it's very difficult to justify human life over animal life.
We've
but
got to find that balance. There's always a balance.
I think the problem is that we have some archaic methods of farming that are absolutely abhorrent. Sow crates. I mean, yes, we may have an Animal Welfare Act, but the fact that sow crates are basically gestational female pigs, sows, are put in a static cage when they give birth so that they don't move and they don't crush their babies, because when they're kept in intensive situations, you've got stress, you've got them moving around, and little piglets are really tiny and really fragile, and mama pigs are really big and really quite clumsy. So they confine these mom pigs to these crates so that they can give birth, and then the babies can feed and the babies can grow up, because the babies are what we eat. That is completely apparent. Like, you are denying that animal of pretty much every single right. So, yes, there's always the best way, the worst way, but there's also a middle way.
Yes,
and correct. We should all be striving for the middle way, and we should be getting cooperation from all sides, and especially the incentivization to do that. Because, unfortunately, when it comes to running a business, you want to make it successful. You want to make a living.
And that's where ethical and sustainable comes in at the end of it. And sustainable, there's a whole list of things that fall under the heading sustainable. Mm. It's got to be commercially sustainable. It's got to be environmentally sustainable.
Exactly.
It's got to be sustainable from a food security point of view. So I think everybody, you're right, everybody has a role to play, from the consumer to the producers, to the people that are in the middle between the consumers and the producers, to come up with an effective solution to the issue.
Exactly. But listeners, from my side, please, I'm asking you to commit to buying free-range chicken eggs. I think it's a very easy thing that you can do to make a difference. Let's try and see if we can get that 5% up and get more people eating free-range eggs. It's really easy to do, and you can do it without having to cough up too much out of your money. Tozy, are you still there? Oh, I think we lost Tozy. Well, Tozy's here.
Yeah, I think we were breaking three or four times.
Oh, dear, you got a little bit of a rest, but you're back there now. Yeah. So, Tozy, I just want to say thank you very much for coming on the show. I'm very glad to hear that the Humane Society is working hard at trying to make life better for our production animals, and I wish you and your team the best of luck.
Thank you, Ansley. Thank you for having us anytime, you know, anytime. And did want to say that out of the 8 billion eggs that we're eating, we're also consuming 1.1 billion chickens a year.
Yeah.
But we're still importing how many tons? 60,000 tons from the U.S. that are on the dock now, as we see.
Sure.
So it means that this appetite will only go up, and then the systems need to change, Ansley. The systems definitely need to change. We should look at things holistically, not only from the economic point of view.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely spot on. I think that, you know, consumption of the actual chickens is a whole nother show that we can get into. But Clint, I think you've been the hero of the day, literally being stuck in traffic and then being rear-ended, rushing in here, making it pretty much spot on time. Well done.
Thank you.
I think you've deserved a big beer or a whiskey or something.
It's been very exciting. I'll go in for an organic vegetable shake.
Good job. Good job. But now, you are off on some exciting travels coming up now.
Yeah, I'm going to be traveling a little bit internationally. I've got an international assignment coming up. And we're actually going to be looking at various number of things. But I'll be spending some time in Germany and a little bit in the States, and then in Costa Rica for a little while.
What are you doing in Costa Rica?
We're actually attending a conference over
there as
well.
That's ridiculous. So. Who has no, can I come, please? Costa Rica. Are you going to get to do any, like, sightseeing, or is it just
gone? I don't know that there'll be too much. It's going to be fairly intense, but I'm sure we'll get a little bit of time to have a look around.
Damn.
So, and then back to Germany for 2 weeks and 6 weeks in total out of
sure.
the country. But I'll see you next. I'll Skype in next month. We can do it by Skype again.
Brilliant. I'll get the hang of the Skype thing. Well, listeners, thank you very much for listening. I'll be back next week.
Download the Cliff Central app, available now on the Apple App Store and Google Play Store. Animal Central on CliffCentral.com. This is CliffCentral.com.